Hey, everybody. This episode with James Henderson from InsidePackSports.com was a two-hour conversation about the Duke game and the state of the program and just a whole bunch of things regarding NC State football. We went ahead and broke it up into two episodes. This is part one, with part two coming later this week. As always, if you want to listen to these live, we post the links to join the audience and the chat in the pod chat and also on our members email list. So go ahead and jump on there if you are not. As always, thanks for listening. Go Pack. Hey guys, pod sponsor Roback wanted me to let you know about their new Q-Zip. It is badass. It's called the North State Q-Zip. It's got NC State red, a little black collar on the inside, and a little Shadow Design North Carolina on it as a little pattern. It is sharp. Y'all should check it out. Remember, you can use code red and white at roback.com to get 20% off your first order. If it's not your first order, just use a different email address or, you know, the old Gmail hack, but putting the plus after your name. So your email plus whatever at Gmail, and it will create a new email address for you. But check it out. It's really slick. It's really good looking. I expect a lot of y'all will rock that to the NC State games, but not the blackout game this week. So check it out. Roback.com, red, white for 20% off. Thanks for listening. I was raised by the wolves. I was raised by the wolves. All right, folks, we are back with another edition of the Red and White Podcast. I'm your host, Evan, here as always with Will, and once again, special guest, James Henderson, Inside Pack Sports. I guess we all need a little bit of a therapy session after that one. Everybody's getting fired on the message boards on Twitter. Even James got fired on his own message board.
Go home, James. How what are you doing? Good, man. How you guys doing?
I'm doing well. I told this to Will already, but the last episode that we did, or that y'all did, got rave reviews, and everybody's like, you need to get James and Will on more often.
Oh, so
I took that as the hint that I'm talking too much, so I'm going to let you guys, you know, have this debate again. But what the hell happened on Saturday, James? Where are we?
Well, you know, we thought it couldn't get worse, right? And it's gotten worse. I mean, at least in my opinion, it's gotten worse. And not just, obviously not the quarterback position. I mean, just everywhere. It's, 3 points against Duke when their offense. Man, it's weird, though, because I know folks don't like it when there's this thought out here, I feel like you can't criticize the defense, right? Like they're untouchable. But I still was frustrated with what happened in that game. And we can, you know, wherever you guys want to start, we can. But for me, like one of the things I've been talking about the last couple of days is you gave up 34 points in four quarters to Marshall. Duke played two quarters in a play and had 24 points. I mean, because you guys, everybody hates when Dave shuts it down, right? Like when you got a 3-score lead or whatever, 2-score lead. What did Elko do?
Oh, he absolutely shut it down. Okay. They didn't do anything.
They didn't do anything. Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah, when your quarterback only has four completions for two touchdowns, I think you shut it down.
Yeah. I mean, and I'm not blaming him. I'm just saying, like, I'm not counting what the final point total. I'm glad he shut it down. It could have been worse, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
Because they had 24 points in two quarters in one play. Like, that's not good, guys. That's not good, you know? And that's just the defense. So when you say it could get worse, it can get worse. I'm not talking just the defense or just the offense in this. Like you look at what's coming up on state schedule, where it's trending does not look good right now.
You don't think Dabo's going to shut it down if he gets a 17 or 21 point lead?
Can Dabo start it up?
Yeah, if NC State gives up 80-yard touchdowns on broken plays with a backup cornerback in the game, then yeah. Like, again, the stuff. Yeah, I mean.
Why was Hinton in the game? Has he been getting random snaps or something?
No, so, you know, this was the rare game. I told you guys the rare game. I don't know if we talked about it when I was on with you guys. I went to this one, and so my seats were behind State's bench. And when Shaheem Battle had that interception on the first drive, I don't know if he banged his head, took a hard hit, or what, but he was on the sidelines throwing up in between series. So Hinton was on the field for those two series. First series, they were able to get out there, get a three and out. I don't even know if Duke noticed it. And then the second series, what do they come out? I believe the very first play, they run the pump and go to Hinton, and you give up an 80-yard touchdown with you blitzing both safeties. And I'm just kind of like, hey, how about let's give some coverage here when you've got Tarente Hinton in the game in this situation against their best receiver? You know, points were going to be at a premium in this game. You knew it. Make this guy who did not look good, make him go up and down the field. He didn't sustain a single drive for a touchdown. Right. Didn't sustain a single drive. You literally probably could have played drop eight the entire game and had a better outcome defensively than you did. Now, it's not sexy. We hate it. Nobody likes it when you're dropping eight and you can't get to the quarterback. I get it. But I personally don't like giving up 80-yard touchdowns. I'm just at that point now. Hopefully others will be with me there. But you're already not good enough to overcome a lot of things. But giving Henry Beelen a 17-3 halftime lead, not good. Not good.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you and I definitely talked about it because we said, is this going to be Tony Gibson just going aggressive, or is he going to sit back and make him work for it? Which I think we've seen this like time and again. There's when he's got faced young quarterbacks, he treats them kind of like veterans and keeps trying to attack them. And, I mean, I just remember when Tyler Van Dyke went off on us and others, right? It's just I get what Gibson is thinking. I'm with you. I would have waited like three or four, maybe at least two or three drives and sat back and been like, what the hell do we got? I mean, you got an interception on the first, what, two or three plays.
And they brought pressure, and it was Battle. But Rente Hinton is not Shaheem Battle, right? Like, so those two drives, I'd understand it if you thought maybe Battle was out the game and you had to continue your game plan. But Shaheem came back in the next series, so there was no indication that he was done for the game. So it's kind of like, how about these two drives just back it off a little bit, right? Like, how about these two drives just drop eight, play coverage. Yeah.
Protect your guy. Protect your guy who hasn't played.
Right. Protect your guy.
I don't understand, and this is a different tangent, but it seems like, and completely anecdotal, when we have a situation like that where we take out our starter and the backup guy goes in, teams exploit that. And I don't feel like we exploit that enough on the other side when it happens to us. And again, anecdotal, but it sure feels that way. And to me, at some point, they've got to recognize when, you know, Battle's out of the game, give him some help. Give the other guy some help, whoever it is, especially a guy who hasn't played, you know, he hasn't played, what, a dozen snaps this year. You know, that's, to me, that's just gross mismanagement of the game. That falls on Gibson and whoever else is running out the, you know, defensive snaps there.
Yeah, it just shouldn't be that easy for Duke. Like, that's my problem with it. It shouldn't be at a point where if one guy makes a mistake, we give this bad quarterback an 85-yard drive. And I'm not saying Henry Beelen won't end up being good. But at this point in time, he's not very good.
Right.
Like, and watching it live, you saw it. I mean, there were several passes that just were not even close. Weren't even close. Yeah. And
well, he was like, what, 4 of 12 for the entire game?
Right, 4 of 12. And he had two or three just really bad throws that didn't even go down as incompletions because they were bad penalties, you know, bullshit PI calls that were terrible. I mean, but those don't even count against his numbers where he's throwing the ball 10 yards past anybody and somehow he gets a flag. That set the tone because I felt like going into this game, you know, regardless of what we think of MJ Morris, NC State should have an advantage there at the quarterback position. And I thought both teams – I still would have believed, though, both teams went in saying, hey, it's on you as a defense to win this game. You know Mike Yoko had to be over there telling his defense that, hey, we got to win this game with our defense. NC State should be saying the same thing, too. And I know I've been getting the last couple of days, well, you only scored 3 points. Sure. You also spent three quarters trying to chase down a double-digit lead with a suspect. You don't want to be in that position. You priority number one for NC State right now every week should be let's get out front and force the other team to chase us so our defense can get turned loose. Who knows? Maybe you get a turnover, get a short field, get something to give you offense, even something else. It's big. You got to get a lead.
So on the, playing off of that, State gets the interception, goes out in the field the next play, the next drive, and goes, I think it was a swing pass to Keon Lassane.
Trash.
Inside dive to DeMarcus Jones, and then a, trash. You know, a, I don't know, whatever else, another play to Keon Lassane. How do you let those be your first three personnel targets in this game when you know you need to get out in a lead and you know you need to get a cushion so you can tee off
someone
on this
to coach.
Rookie QB?
Someone listened to Dave Doran, said he got to get his guy Keon more touches.
Yeah, and
shoes.
And I'm not calling Keon Lassane trash. Keon's a great kid. I'm sure he's earned everything they're giving him. All I'm saying that what you're describing is trash. Like, yeah. Coaches, I'm sure, have scripts they put together, and some follow them, some don't. You have general game plans you go by going into each week. I mean, you've literally had freaking 7 days to decide what your first play is going to be in this game, right? Like, you should know going in what it should be. I don't think it should be a jet sweep to Keon Lassane. That's just my personal opinion. Clearly, Robert and I disagrees. And I certainly don't think you follow it up with an inside zone run to DeMarcus Jones. Like, at that point, I'm just sitting here. This is what we came up with. You had a short field. You know, think about like the couple of times KC, you line him up at running back and he popped early on, he popped like a 10 or 15 yard run. Go with that first play. First play, get you a give him, let's do something creative. I personally just don't believe Keon Lassane jet sweeps creative. I mean, they may chalk it down as one of those, but. That's not something that I would go be feeling. I feel like I'm taking out of my trick play box, right? Like, I don't think that I would call it that. So it's frustrating. And then on the third down play, MJ threw a good ball, dropped.
Mm-hmm.
Lassane dropped it. Like, I thought the first quarter, and this is where I felt like game flow was so critical. I thought the first quarter, MJ Morris looked really good. State had four drops. Had four drops. That's not on him. He put balls in spots. State was moving the ball. But once Duke got up 10-3, I think it was, and it felt like just a pressure kind of got to him a little bit in terms of having to try and do even more. And that's why I thought, I looked back at that first touchdown Duke got as being so pivotal, because I thought if State could have got up 10-0, now Beilin is in that position. But instead, Beilin is in the front running. I don't have to do anything. I can pull a pass out my ass every once in a while. That's literally all they had to do. Like, didn't have to do anything. And so that when we talk game flow each week and starting fast, this game is a perfect example of why. Because Duke's defense got the benefit from State now having to be one-dimensional, not feeling like they can run the ball, having to turn it over to Morris, who frankly isn't ready to win a game like that on the road. First road start, we talked about it last week, against that defense. He's just not. So I was more upset with the defensive start because I knew they had to win this game for State.
You know, it almost felt like Duke flipped. They had the same game plan, right? We just talked about get ahead and let your defense do what they wanted to do. Duke's defense is strong. And we let them flip the script on us by running out Keon, DeMarcus Jones, Keon, right? The first three plays. And I feel like that was such a critical moment early in the game, after we praised them last week for manufacturing touches for Julian Gray, KC, you know, other guys that we feel like are, you know, dynamic athletes, and then they roll out those three, and I just felt like that was such a mistake, and it was such a turning point in the game, because like you said, Duke wanted to lean on their defense the same way we were, and I felt so good about our game plan going in, being able to, you know, stop Duke's run, stop their offense, especially with this kid in. And I don't know about you, but the rest of us had hope that there was going to be some offensive carryover from last week. And it just felt like all kinds of out of sorts, from the procedure penalties to the personnel on the field. Everything about it just felt just such a departure from the Marshall game. It was – and I know everybody felt it was just so frustrating.
Yeah, I know. I thought a lot of that – when, you know, I told you how great I thought MJ played, or well he played early on in the game. Watching him from the field, I didn't sense the energy that I was expecting to see. I didn't see it. And I didn't see, you know, that fire we've talked about, all those things that you want to see. I mean, at times he appeared distant. And I'm not saying that's right or wrong or out of the norm. I mean, this was his first road start. Like, he hasn't been in this environment yet. And he hadn't been in that setup yet. You know, everything had been at home, Carter Finley Stadium, Wake, you know, Virginia Tech, right. Marshall, right? Like, this was by far the best defense he's faced. On the road, night game, now you fall behind. Now you're dealing with players dropping passes. Now you're dealing with false starts. How is he going to handle that? That's where the inexperience comes in at. And you really kind of could see it. But you're right. All of it's not on him. I mean, as an offensive line, don't false start, right? But I will say part of the problem for them, and I'm not trying to excuse it for them. We talked about this on our podcast. You know, Alex G, who's on our podcast, a former offensive lineman, played at Richmond. He talked about how one of the things that bothered him with what State's doing is they're asking their offensive line to sit in a stance for 25 seconds now, while they sub out every other position and do their checks and do all this. He just said, you know, these are big guys. Like, they might naturally just rock. I'm not making an excuse for them, but from a coaching standpoint, this is things you can help as a coach. Play faster. Like, heaven forbid NC State run a play back-to-back without subbing. I mean, is that an innovative thought right there, guys?
Mind-blowing.
I mean, if you're going to do it, right, it's like, let the guys get out of the stance, right? Don't put them in that stance for that long. You know, if you're going to really drive it around that long, put them in at 15, 10. Right? There's
or
really
just
no
huddle.
Rush.
Yeah. If you're going to sub every play, just huddle. You know, just huddle up, treat it like an old school traditional. But instead, NC State rushes to the line to sub, and you guys know the rule now where when you sub, the ref stands over the ball. So now your line's standing there over the ball waiting on the ref to move, and you're subbing from Trent Mitchell Trent Penix to Reed Mitchell and Jacarius Peak. It's like, well, why? I mean, the coaching in that area for me offensively has bothered me even more. You guys know me. I'm more players versus coaches. I don't really like getting on coaches. But that shit that is like, you could help your team out here. Right, like you could be helping your team out by subbing less, playing with more pace, you know, lining back up. I'll give you an example of what Duke did that I thought was outstanding coaching, and we've not seen that from NC State this year. You guys remember on the third and maybe 15 from their goal line, they popped a QB run to get out 20 yards off the goal line. Well, they went tempo right away and threw a vertical shot.
Yeah.
Lined right back up, didn't call a play, lined right back up and just threw it. Now, they didn't connect on it because it's Henry Beeland and his first game and, you know, he threw it. Yeah, he had got a couple yards behind. Aiden White was open and he just overthrew it. But when have you seen NC State do that?
Yeah.
Hit any sort of big play and line right back up and run something before the defensive set. I mean, I don't even know if NC State got a call in defensively.
I saw it once. It was the first drive in the UConn game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Haven't seen it since.
Yeah. Duke played like they were like, well, we need to score, right?
Right.
We need to be explosive. And that's what's so weird is I would have thought the exact same thought process would be what we had. Quick question. Did Trent Penix come back into the game after he got injured?
No. So, right. You know, so watching, I was watching Trent. You know, he tried to give it a go during warmups of the second half, and they took his helmet away, and he was so distraught on the sidelines. I don't know the extent of the injury. It didn't look real bad.
Yeah.
I think it might be like a, you know, look, I hate talking injuries, maybe like an ankle.
Yeah.
So, it was something he tried to come back in. It wasn't one of those deals where he was ruled completely out.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, because I wasn't sure if that was going to be like another season ender for him. It was really hard to tell. It just looked like he was kind of, I think they kind of helped him, not carried him off per se, but anyways. You know, I mean, yeah, I don't know, man. How many times do I have to see Anthony Smith or Terrell Timmons open to, like, just leave them in there all game?
You see like, I'm clapping for Anthony Smith
we did this. Oh, my
Y'all
gosh.
Y'all did that okay? You got it. Yeah, congratulations, yeah. Anthony. You got it.
Now, here's the question, right? You know, I think Dave after the game said, well, we got some guys open and they didn't make the play or something like that. And, you know, so the question is Dave going to penalize them now? Is Ant Smith going to get penalized because he can't make a diving 42-yard catch or whatever?
I was going to ask you guys that. So I'm in the stadium. Was that a drop? Like, it looked like he had to dive for the ball.
No.
I'm confused by what's going on here. I've been told, you know, on our boards, everybody was mad at me because Anthony Smith dropped the pass somehow, according to them. But I'm that was not a drop. Like, a drop is what, you know, Bradley Rosner had come across the middle.
He overthrew him, and Ant Smith caught up to it, right? But he had to dive. Like, there was – that ball wasn't an accurate throw to him.
No, and you see on that route why I want Anthony Smith to play. Like, they're even. Ball's in the air. He gets 3 yards on the guy. His burst and acceleration. I mean, even the PI that he should have gotten called, he was behind a guy earlier in the game on a vertical ball that was underthrown.
Yeah.
Right? And the guy, and I don't know what angle y'all had on the TV. They never, you know, at Duke, they're not going to show the replays of those calls. They're going to let it go. But I thought it looked like it was PI in the stadium. But you play guys with upside like that. That's
a little bit of wide receiver coaching there, right, to teach these guys how to come back and get that penalty. Like, that's what it looks like. Like, you watch how – I mean, you would have thought the Duke wide receiver got hit by a sniper, how hard he went down, right? And then you go back and watch the replay, and you see him grabbing the DB's wrist or hand or whatever, and then throw himself to the ground. And it's like, that's the kind of stuff that's probably a little bit of seasoning, a little coaching, a little experience can bring. But I'd rather see Ian Smith and Terrell Timmons in the game all game. I don't understand, to your point, right, the amount of rotations we have, and then – like, you just go back to that first play series of the game. That, like, that's almost like, oh, hey, we're going to reward these guys because they had a good week of practice instead of we're going to go try to win the game. Like, that, and that's the problem. It's like, I just don't think, I think Dave and these guys need to be a little cold-hearted and put the guys in there that get separation and make plays. And, like, this year it's not Keon, and I don't know why we're giving him multiple touches. It's not happening. Like, it's like, you guys remember Mean Girls? Like, stop trying to make fetch happen. That's what I feel like with Keon. It's not happening.
Well, you know, on our pod, my guy Philip Danford compared it to, like, rec league football.
Yeah, I thought that was a good idea. Or a good comparison.
You know, it's just kind of like everybody has to play. You know, my son plays City League basketball. We've got a 50% playing time rule where everybody has to play at minimum half the game. It feels like State offensively is going through that right now. It's like, okay, well, we've got to get everybody 10 snaps. And then once we hit the 10-snap threshold, we can play others, whatever. I don't get it. You know, Duke, Jalen Moore, Calhoun, that's about it at wide receiver for them. They don't tinker around with nine guys and do all these different things. They don't. You don't need to. Like Trent Penix goes out, I'm sitting here thinking, okay, well, maybe they can now go back to Juice Vereen, who we haven't seemed to have seen since Notre Dame. He doesn't play. And I don't know how good of blockers Reed Mitchell and Jacarius Peak are. I can't be playing them at tight end over Juice Vereen right now. I'm just I don't think the blocking's that great, guys. I'm just saying. I mean, this is not like NC State's running this rushing attack that's dominant, right? Like, I mean, Juice Vereen literally played from a structure standpoint. Notre Dame's man-to-man defense is better than anything NC State will have faced all year. And you go watch him against their man coverage, consistently get separation and get open. And it's almost like he's in the doghouse. Which I don't know why. If he did something, fine. But
I think they
are you trying to win? Are you trying to win games, or are we? You know,
he had the drop in that. What game was that?
The UVA game. The UVA game, I think, was like. I mean, Robert and I was like chewing his ass out in the UVA game. I remember that. And then
about a block, I believe.
It was the block, and it was also like. I mean, I still don't know what happened with that interception. Whatever. And then I think next game was UL, and he barely played in that. So, I mean, that's my thing, right? Is I'd rather coach them up and take advantage of their ability, and I will live with like the inefficiencies. Like if MJ is going to go, 24 for 40? I'd rather be 24 for 40, and it's like, well, these guys are getting separation. Maybe they're dropping it. Maybe one guy makes a wrong read. Like, I don't know. Like I'm at the point where it's play the young. And explosive guys and live with it, because right now you got to sell hope for next year and growth for these guys. You got to try to make yourself fun and appealing to recruits. Like you're fighting for bowl eligibility right now, and like you're not gonna get there, I don't think, grinding it out with you know, the Keons, like Rosner. I mean, even Rosner's in my doghouse right now. I just think it's time to just lean in and say, all right, it's a youth movement. Let's go.
Well, I mean, KC wasn't good against Notre Dame. I think he caught 5 of 11 targets, had maybe 2 drops in that game. But what did State do? They stuck with him. They stuck with him. They kept playing him. They kept giving him opportunities, and now you're getting him. He's now stacked back-to-back really strong games together. And as a true freshman, you're going to have ups and downs with a guy like Juice Vereen. And by the way, can we stop with a tight end deal? I mean, he's 6'4", 215 pounds, right? Like, let's just call him a wide receiver. And then we don't have to even sub him in for Trent and Reed. And just put him in the wide receiver room and play the guy. Which it'll solve itself at the end of the year, because guys as talented as him, they watch other guys who aren't as talented as them play. What do they do? I mean, I don't think we're saying much. They're out, right? So it'll probably figure itself out, because I personally wouldn't be watching somebody else who I don't think's better than me getting snaps. And he was a 4-star recruit, State's highest rated recruit, I believe, in the incoming class, even higher rated than KC.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe he has as much, if not more, upside than Conception. If State would play him and give him, he has some really cool traits you could build off of. But the big thing right now for me, I'm at the point, man, where I don't care about a bowl. The bowl's going to be crappy, whatever bowl you go to. They're not winning the ACC. Your number one objective is figuring out if you have a quarterback or not. That's your number one objective. Because they need to know, do I need a starter or not? Because I'm not there yet on MJ. I know I'm not.
The only reason I brought up the bowl game or trying to get bowl game is just getting practices to get more idea on these guys, right? And also to see who bolts, right? I mean, it'll give you an opportunity. If someone bolts going into the bowl series, right, then you can see, okay, well, we got to see what we got here. But to your point, right, I think it's about finding a quarterback, but also about developing those skill players. Like, I just do not understand the thought process. I would put the best players on there, not the guy who has been there longer. You know, I think it's like, if they're doing something better in practice than the others, what is it? Does everyone else understand that metric? Do they know that? Are they getting fairly graded, or are you rewarding guys to suck around? Like, that's my question. And I think I think we said it last week, right? Like, they should have treated Marshall like it was a mini buy and self-scout themselves. And then we came out and we saw this, and it was almost like they purposely went backwards. Like, just some of the play calling, the personnel rotations, you know, to your point, right? Like, not understanding when you have so-and-so in the game to simplify things for them. You know, if the problem with Vereen is you're asking him to do much, then make it simpler. Like, Anthony Smith doesn't require a very difficult game plan.
Yeah, I mean, the Anthony Smith
thing needs two or three routes. What I'm saying, he needs only to know two or three routes of the route tree. He's still open. It doesn't matter. And I bet you get the same outcome with Vereen, right?
I would rather a 45-yard incompletion to Anthony Smith than a 2-yard hitch.
Hell yeah.
Yes. Of course.
You can call it a drop if you want to call it a drop where you had to dive for the ball. Throw more of those. Throw more of those. You'll eventually connect on some of them. And we saw with Duke, you only need 2 or 3 if you've got a good defense.
Yeah.
Because that's where I circle back to State's defense at. Like, I am going to give them some blame, but part of it is they're not being allowed to protect leads. They're not being into that chase, you know, chase offense. But like, Beilin had to throw only 12 times. Imagine if he had to throw 30 or 40 because they were down a touchdown or 2 touchdowns. Completely different game. Different game, in my opinion. Game flow matters so much, man. That's not a 24-3 ball game with Riley Leonard out. It's not. It played out that way on Saturday night. But State catches some of those drops early on, and they go down and score a touchdown, maybe get up 10-0. You may have a completely different ball game. That dude didn't have to do anything. He didn't have to do anything.
Yeah, the most they had to do. Oh, sorry.
I was just gonna say, do you think it's as simple as they didn't execute or they weren't ready? And I'm not sure if there's a big difference in between the two.
But I think part of it, like for me, I think part of it at the skill positions is like drops, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
I think drops is a consistency deal. I think drops is a repetition deal with the quarterback, time on the field. You know, when you're playing I think I have the snap counts up from PFF, but when you're playing all these receivers pretty much the same amount of time, are you pressuring yourself? Like, are you putting pressure on yourself? Like, are you comfortable? Are you trying too hard to do something that should just come natural to you? Right? Like, I think that's my issue with them at, from a drop standpoint. You know, I'm looking at the numbers right now. KC led State 43 routes run. I think 51 dropbacks or 46 pass plays. KC had 43. Keon was 33. Porter Rooks, like Porter Rooks played ran 30 routes and didn't have a target. Like, that's the definition of just, you know, riding, walking on a treadmill. Right? I'm getting my steps in. I'm getting my steps in, guys. How many steps we want to get in today? Right? Like, I mean, you ran 30 routes and didn't command a single target.
Yeah. Why?
You know,
what's the purpose?
I mean, Anthony Smith ran 15. He had 3 targets. Bradley Rosner ran 19. He had 5 targets. Hey, give those guys more reps. You may have more numbers. Like, they're at least getting open to where the quarterback sees them to throw them the ball.
Yeah, and maybe they're the primary, but I just, you know, to your point, right, has Porter Rooks really been the primary this year?
No.
I know Keon has been, right? And, like, the numbers just don't support keeping those guys into a degree. And I'm sure that there is some thought process of, well, I really don't want to have a mutiny on my hands with veteran players, but they're not giving you anything. And you're about to have, like, kind of like you're insinuating with Vereen and others, right? If you tell really young, talented players that, despite the fact that you are doing what your job is, which is get open for the most part, you're not going to get preferential treatment, you know, on the as far as snaps, like, then why am I here? Why would I want to stick in this offense? Especially if you're only getting, you know, Ant Smith got, 3 targets, 12 routes, what did you say?
Right? Yeah, he ran 15 routes and he got 3 targets. So that's about a 20% target share, which is a good, solid number. And then they're also high-value targets. You look at the routes he ran. I mean, they were all 10-plus yards down the field, 32-yard ADOT. So I want more of those. You know, I want more of those. You'll hit a couple.
Even if, I mean, like, things like if, like, again, I think if you coach him up a little bit and tell him, like, hey, when that ball's underthrown, you need to come back into the DB and draw that contact. Worst case scenario, Ant Smith, terrible hands, is going to get you 15 yards. Best case scenario, it's either a touchdown or a field flip.
Yeah.
Why not have more of that?
Yeah, and that's where the coaching to me comes in at. It's the substitution, like, because I don't think, like, I don't know, man, playing on the road, the false start stuff, I don't really know what 2J can say to him, like, don't false start. Like, I don't
I mean, you could go to a silent count or something
I mean, you could, and we talked about some of the other changes you can make, maybe huddle if you're going to be subbing and they're not going to let you go fast anyways. Like, it doesn't make any sense to line up right away if you're not going fast at all. It really doesn't. So you could help yourself by doing that. But once you're over the ball, it's on you to know what you're doing. I mean, and it's not just been the O-line. Like, we've seen DeCari Collins get false starts this year, right? We've seen receivers get them. So, yeah, something's got to change in the wide receiver room.
Well, is it just the wide receiver room? I mean, I feel like this is there's a bunch of things, and it almost exclusively extends to the offensive side of the ball. Now, I know the defensive side of the ball is not perfect, but every week for the last 2 years we've been talking about, man, the offensive line is really not getting better, or the wide receivers are really not getting separation, or they're not catching the ball, or personnel usage, or this quarterback didn't see this guy, or, you know, not seeing his reads. To me, there's a systematic problem with the entire offensive side of the ball. Am I crazy?
No. I mean, there's not a position group I feel good about right now. I mean, like, I love NC State's defensive line. I wish I could feel that way about a single position group on the offensive side. I don't. And I'm talking from young guys to, like, you look at NC State's running back room. And it's not as simple to me as just recruiting. Michael Allen was a 4-star recruit. Like, he's in year 2 of his program. Him and Omarion Hampton were the top 2 running backs in the state 2 years ago. Go look at what Hampton's doing at North Carolina in year 2 of his tenure of his career, and look at what Allen is. Now, I'm not saying Michael Allen has to be Omarion Hampton. But there's a pretty damn big gap if you look at their numbers. To where one was, both were top 10 players in the state. Both are four-star kids. So to me, it's not as simple as, I think there's this notion out there, well, we need more four-stars. Okay, I'm personally, you know, and I run a recruiting website, so this may sound crazy to people that I say this, but I really don't care what that dude's ranked. We need more guys that can play.
Yeah.
Damn it, if he's a four-star, great. If he's a two-star, great. I don't care. Go find guys that are good. Jalen Samuels was a two-star. He was really good. He was really good from day one. Get out, evaluate, find good players. That's my problem with staying in the transfer portal. Yeah. We talked about it. The offensive line, you brought back four guys, you know, on your offensive line. But over the last 3 years, you've lost Ike Ekwonu, Grant Gibson, Bryson Spies, Chandler Zavala. That's a lot to have lost. So what does NC State do? They bring in Dawson Jaramillo as their lone transfer from Oregon, and he was slotted to be their swing offensive lineman. Not even starting now. Let me break that in. Not even starting is what you brought in out of the transfer portal to start fall camp. How about go out and get some guys that you feel like, hey, bring in multiple transfer offensive linemen. You know, there was a play where Tim McKay got injured in the game against Duke. They go to Matt McKay, who's a former walk-on, who's on scholarship this year. You shouldn't have to be in that position. DeMarcus Jones, a former walk-on, ran 22 routes at running back this week. I mean, some of these guys, man, like, they must be killing it in practice. That's all I'm saying. Like, the practices must be just unbelievable because I don't see it.
And this is where I have a disconnect with what people are, I would say, on the inside are saying, right? They're saying, you know, donate more, you know, so we can fund our NIL. And I'm all for it, right? I get that. I get that part of it. Everybody's doing it. You need to buy some players. But we have not managed the roster, especially on the offensive side of the ball, well at all. We are at this point now where we have these huge deficiencies, and I know you had to see them in the spring and in the summer, and you don't address them. And that's the part to me. It's just like, if I donate, do I trust them to identify? Do they have somebody looking at this saying, this needs to be improved, or that we can't go in a season with, you know, no offensive linemen that we want to play? Just something's missing there, and I don't like it. My trust in them building the right roster right now is very low, and I don't think I'm alone.
Well, I think part of the problem is two things. One, they have to clean up the roster. Like, they haven't had, and what I mean by clean up the roster is they don't, you know, everybody loves it when State doesn't have attrition for some reason. I don't. Like, you know, we saw people in the spring touting that the State had only had like six or seven guys go into the portal. It was like top two or three. I think Wake was up there in State. Well, those two programs look really good right now. Right? Like, yeah. Our guy Clawson over there, you're looking great, Dave. You know? But my point is, sometimes attrition is good. You have 85 sure. spots. Like, so I'm with you. I think throwing a lot of darts in the transfer portal is the way to go. I personally believe that. But you need space to be able to do that, right? Especially with the portal, because some of those guys you're trying to bring in mid-year, so you're going to need some spots for them mid-year to be available. You got to get rid of some of the, and I don't want to use, I don't want that's the dead weight. Jags. I don't want that to be taken the wrong way. Right, like you got to get rid of some of the dead weight so you've got space to take guys. I love when people tout the job that Deion Sanders has done at Colorado, right? Like, and tout it in a sense of, well, they only won one game last year. Well, this is a completely different fucking team they have. Like, it's not like he didn't just bring back everybody they had and win four games right now. No, he ran everybody off and brought in 70 new guys. And so if you're State, you need to shed some weight so you can bring in and throw some darts at some of these. Like, there's not a position on State's team that if it were me, I wouldn't bring a transfer in next year. Not a single position. Running back, they need a transfer. Wide receiver, they need multiple transfers. And when I say transfers, like, folks are like, well, James, like, Bradley Rosner's not doing well, so why would you want to transfer or Dakari Collins? Well, yeah, but you know what Bradley Rosner and Dakari Collins are doing? They're playing. They're at least getting on the field. Like, how many high school guys do you have that can't get on the field right now?
Yeah,
right.
We just talked about it on the O-line. Like, you've been recruiting 3, 4, 5 offensive linemen every single year out of the high school ranks, And you're at a point now where your backup right tackle is a walk-on? Where are all these guys you've been recruiting? Whereas a transfer, whether it's Noah Potter, Robert Kennedy, Dakari Collins, Bradley Rosner, they're all at least in the rotation, right?
It seems like they have gotten defensive evaluations, right, almost every time on portal guys, right? And so I think there is some validity to ask yourself, why are we striking at a lower rate on the offense? So I was tweeting with, or I guess it's called tweet. I don't even know what we call it anymore. But I was on the formerly known Twitter with Tom Lavolsi before we started. And I was asking him, you know, they were saying, basically, you need to donate more. That's why we're in this problem. And my question then was, well, let's imagine that you doubled or tripled your NIL fund. Are we still only bringing in Rosner, Collins, and Jaramillo? Like, and maybe he misinterpreted my question, but my whole thing is, there are more guys that should have left this roster. You probably could have, I hate to say it, you could have asked 7 to 10 guys to leave and it wouldn't have hurt. You could have, and the thing is then they say, well, we can't afford the guys to come and get them. And I say, I'm pretty sure that there are experienced offensive linemen at the FCS level, at the G5 level, that you can convince to come here and take that $25,000 a year to play here. There's wide receivers, there's running backs. There is plenty of talent out there. You just have to go take a risk and pick those guys up. And that's where I'd say, like, I just don't feel like we're putting in that effort. I think, I don't know if it's just we don't want to have those conversations with our players. Are we just really, you know, drinking our own Kool-Aid so much and think we can develop anyone just because we had a couple classes where everything lined up? Like, that's the problem. And so my thing is, like, if you want us to donate more, then be transparent about it and say, well, we're trying to go get 10 guys this year. You'll get more donations probably, especially right now. If you say, we need money to go get XYZ, I bet people would donate more if that's the problem. I just think a lot of us are skeptical that that's the issue. I think it's we're too beholden to the guys that we recruited. We don't have what it takes to be, I don't know what to call it, like ice cold about the decision, make it a business decision and tell these guys, like, hey, it's just not working out. You know, that's my concern.
I think if you ask State right now, they would tell you, and again, this is my opinion, no one's going to probably say it. No one will say it on record, but the $25,000 deal was a bad deal. Like, $25,000 to every scholarship player is not something they want, in my opinion. I know Charlie Stallings, I believe, put that in place when he was in place at the Pack of Wolves, because what it does is, yeah, it's great to, you know, you get headlines when you announce it and all that, but who's leaving that if I'm not playing at NC State right now?
How do you get them out?
Like, you're not getting rid of guys. Because, like, I can't, you know, in the past, you might be able to call up Charlotte and say, hey, take, I don't know, whoever. You know, he'll come and play for you. Good kid. We can't get him in. You know, come and get him. And that kid will go there because he knows he can play. Well, now you're getting $2,000 a month on top of your cost of attendance, on top of your scholarship. You guys were in college one time. I know for me, I mean, I used to referee and make, I think, $100 a week. And I felt like I was living good, guys.
Yeah. Brother, like, I felt like I was living. You should have worked at Gumpy's. You should have worked at Gumpy's with me, man. Yeah. It was like I felt like a king.
Yeah. I mean, and so I'm sitting here thinking, okay, with school paid for, you know, your meal plans paid for, and I'm getting $2,000 a month, you're going to have to kick me out of here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I don't think they can. And so I think, I do believe, I wouldn't be surprised if that plan goes away. Which is then you're going to see all of a sudden the attrition you've been asking for. So I kind of feel like that's why they've been kind of a rock and a hard place when it comes to the portal in terms of volume because of that, just not being able to get rid of guys. But where I 100% agree with you, I think the evaluation process has been very lazy on the offensive side. And what I mean by lazy, I'll give you an example. That was 2022 last year, NC State brought in as their transfer Darryl Jones from Maryland, who just so happened to play under Joker Phillips when he was at Maryland.
Yeah, right.
You know, now Darryl Jones wasn't a great player at Maryland. You know, he had a specific skill set. He was fast. And look, he came in a lot like Rosner. I mean, he had moments. You know, he was in the rotation. I'm fine with that. But that's not a thorough evaluation. Dakari Collins. He has ties to Jatavis Sanders, who helps handle recruiting for NC State. Jatavis knew him out of high school. Yeah, that helped you go out and get Ja'Cari Collins, who was a four-star recruit at Clemson. And I'm not ready to throw Collins away in a sense because he's just a sophomore. Like, he's the type of transfers I want to bring in. You're going to have to start bringing in guys where they can't leave anymore because of the two-time rule. You can develop him, all those things. But, again, prior connection, we take him. Like, how about go out and get a guy you don't know, and he might just be damn good, right? Like, NC State played Virginia 2 weeks ago. They went out and got Malik Washington from Northwestern, who was a slot receiver for them, and he leads the ACC in receiving. He leads the ACC, but he leads the ACC in receiving right now, and he was free. He was free. Like all this whole thought process that you need $975 million. You know, 995, 95. I'm going to add a period of the 95 at the end of it. You need all this money to get guys. I don't buy it. And again, I'm not saying you don't need money. You do. I'm saying if you evaluate properly, there are guys out there you can get that may not cost you hardly anything that can play. I think the evaluation has been lazy. I think the evaluation has not been thorough.
Yeah, Louisville's Jamari Thrash is another example of a guy who came from Georgia State or Georgia Southern, one of the Georgias. And I know his deal's out there, and it's nothing. It's not anything that we couldn't compete with. But, again, you have to identify these people. And that's my bigger issue with all this is that I do trust the defensive side of the ball to get this right. You know, I think Dave did it right when he went to Virginia Tech and said, you've had historically had a good defense. I'm taking all your coaches. And that's essentially what he did. He took Wiles. He took DeForest. He took whoever else.
Brian Mitchell.
Yeah, Mitchell. And paired him with Tony Gibson. And I think they clearly know what they're doing. They are identifying the guys they want, and they're filling in the positions. Because you look at the defensive line, for example, the position you said you're comfortable with, right, and they have Savion Jackson, C.J. Clark, but then they're bringing in, Brandon Clark.
Robert Kennedy. Kennedy.
Huge upside.
Perfect example.
These guys.
Old Dominion. You get Robert Kennedy out of Old Dominion, was a starter for them. High PFF grades. He was really good on a G5 level. He's a plug and play guy for you as a starter.
Right.
Robert Kennedy probably didn't cost him hardly anything.
And the offensive side of the ball has just, I don't trust them to get it right. And fair or not, they have not proven it to me over I don't know how many periods of time. Anybody can get Jonathan Paylor right? We know that guy's legit. It's not the Paylors. It's the offensive line. It's the everybody in between that you need to build a suitable foundation. And I don't think I'm alone in saying that State fans in general there's no trust in this staff to get it done in that point, whether it's the evaluation or how they approach it, how they recruit it. I don't know. There's a big gap in there. And if the offensive side of the ball was just half as good recruiting and developing and identifying the talent as the defensive side of the ball has been, we wouldn't be in this position. We would beat Utah, which is my goal, is to beat Utah, a competitive program. And I don't think right now, I don't trust the staff to do that.
Yeah,
so somebody goes, give us more money. Or donate more and fix the problem. Like I got into it with Ethan on Twitter the other day when he said, "Well, you can fix this problem by donating." I don't believe that because I don't believe this staff is on the offensive side of the ball is going to get it right. And now maybe I'm being too irrational, but prove it to me, right? Show me that you can do it because you have not done it. You've brought in Daryl Jones, you've brought in Rosner, you've brought in these guys, and you've only partially addressed the issues. I don't think they're good enough. First of all, and then you don't address the offensive line. Like you say, you bring in one guy. It doesn't make any sense to me. So I'm not donating more money. I'm not giving to this because I don't have faith anymore that they can get done on that side of the ball.
So I'd say counterpoint, right? They got Casey, right? If they would play him, I feel like they got Vereen, right?
That's fine. It's the high school guys. You can get the elite guys correct is what I'm saying.
What I'm saying is they have shown that they can identify the right guys out of high school.
Anybody can identify those guys.
Yeah. And land them. Like, that's the thing. So my thing is you've got something that's working there from that equation, so I struggle to understand why you can't do a similar thing in the portal right now and say, okay, well, we got these guys in the portal. These are their stats. These are the schemes that they're in. It's, like, not that hard to go out and be like, hey, random player, I'm interested in you, right? Instead of having to be like, I need a connection through blah, blah, blah. And, you know, like Tom Love also was saying, like, you know, agents are kind of making things a lot more difficult. Okay, that's one thing. But, like, I think they can choose the right guys. The offensive line thing, you just hit it, is what confuses me. Why did you only go get Jaramillo? Like, we've seen this offensive line struggle for years. Like, and you guys were always, like, telling us that people were trying to tell us that the run game was better than, you know, than what we saw with our eyeballs, right? And that there was all this Pro Football Focus.
No.
I'm not saying you. I'm just saying this is like a broad thing. But what I'm saying is it was obvious to see that Icky was really good, right? And you can say Grant Gibson was good and others. But
all right, Chandler's
in Zavala.
The Panthers now. Yeah.
Right?
That's three of your five guys.
but what I'm saying is Zavala – but that's what I'm saying is those Zavala was a D2 guy from Fairmont or whatever, right?
Exactly.
Like
take
that
more
was
of those
one where
guys.
They went way out – and I would say go get those.
Mm-hmm.
There's players there. And my thing is, like, I think you could heavily recruit in the portal at lower levels for interior linemen. You don't have to be physically 6'8" and have this long wingspan. You just have to be old, stout, and know what you're doing. And that's the problem this year, right? Like, you go back and look at all the problems. It was when all the injuries were happening on the interior and they could not figure out how to do their job. So just selectively recruit certain positions in the portal like that, and then go try to take some haymakers on guys who are just have like explosive numbers at a lower level.
I think Dave and their staff want to reward current players via NIL. I think they want their quote unquote, you know, high money or however you want to label them players to be your stars, than guys that have earned it here. You look at Peyton, who's doing well, I'm sure, from an NIL standpoint. On the offensive side, they feel like Dylan McMahon is one of those guys.
Why?
And then at quarterback, then obviously you go out and get Brennan Armstrong. State was very competitive going to get Armstrong. He had options. He was on the top transfer. It didn't work out. You know, it didn't work out with him.
But that was I think that was a good risk to take.
Yes, you take that risk. Right. I mean, you take that risk. My issue is at the skill positions. Because I don't know how much football you guys watch. I watch a lot of games on. There's been this kind of stretch of like every night a college game's been on, right, for like 2 weeks or something.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I'm watching I think it was like FIU and UTEP late last week. And UTEP had this receiver who just kept making crazy catches. And he's at freaking UTEP, right? And I'm just like, okay – is it really that hard to just kind of look at some of the numbers for these guys, watch their tape, and say, let's try and get that guy? I don't think you need to work. I think it circles back to a lot of times. I wonder if it's how much State embraces culture under Dorn and being familiar with somebody. And I think that's why they tend to fall back on their relationships with players in the past, right or wrong. I think that's why they handle it that way. I just think with the portal now and with the transfer market in terms of guys are leaving earlier, you can be more aggressive in the portal. If it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. You can be more aggressive. But you need to be in there throwing darts, period. Like the dart board, like it's an easier eval than high school. I mean, even we talk about guys like KC, right? We talk about guys like KC and you know, I know Ethan Ethan Berry, who works for me at IPS, we get into it all the time about – you know, he's been telling me consistently, well, I think the wide receiver room is going to be better in 2 years once we get Paylor and Anderson and these guys in here. I'm like, well, why? Why would we automatically assume that? I can't. Porter Rooks was a four-star recruit. Michael Crowell was a four-star recruit. Julian Gray was a four-star recruit. What happened? Like, there's no guarantees there with the high school kids either, even if they are four-star recruits. So why not go out and recruit? Like, the kid that Ethan brought up was Jamari Thrash. Like, that's not that difficult of an evaluation.
No.
I mean, he led the Sun Belt in receiving, and he's in the transfer portal.
Yeah.
And let me just say this to your point earlier, right? If the culture is so strong and the culture is so important, how is it that the culture can't withstand bringing in new guys to it? Right? Like, the culture – I hate this implication that only our guys can be good people who are good at football. Like, there are other really, really good players out there that I bet if you surrounded them by a bunch of guys that work hard, tough, and together, we'll be good here. aren't going to be knuckleheads. Like, it's just this implication is like everyone else out there has a drug problem or whatever, right? Like, you can't trust them. Everyone outside of us, they're all bad. Only our players are good. Only our players are smart, right? Like, I just, it's just so weird. Your culture is so fucking good. You should be able to bring in any knucklehead and straighten them out and have that, you know, the strength of the pack as the wolf crap work for you.
I don't buy it. Like, I mean, I coached AAU girls basketball for, I think, 7 years, and I had the same group. And we're talking a group of girls who, by the time they got to college level, where they were being recruited to go to college, they were D2, D3 kids. You know, I think I had one that was a D1 player. And it was hell handling them in terms of expectations and what they thought that, you know, they were with their families and all that. And we're talking girls basketball. Like, if we sit here and think the NC State's and any college program's culture is great from a standpoint of everybody's rah-rah about the team, happy. No. I mean, everybody's not happy because every single kid on that team probably thinks they should be playing right now. And I guarantee you, every one of their family members thinks they should be playing. And it's even worse when you stink and when you're not good on one side of the ball, because now you've got one side pushing the other side. And so I guess what I'm saying is I wouldn't care. I can't care about it. I can't worry about that. My job is to win games. My job is to recruit talent. Like, it's now at a point with NIL where you're getting a check. Right? Like, I mean, that's the harsh reality of it all. You look at the situation, for instance, with Brendan Armstrong. It's not, I'm sure that was a tough situation or a tough discussion for Dave to have. But hey, you know, what is it? It's October, middle of October. End of October, start of November, Brendan probably gets another check.
Yeah.
He'll be okay. He'll be okay.
Let's say he right? got $100,000 or something like that. Maybe it's more, maybe it's less, right?
More.
Right. Boy, I'm just making it simple, right? Mm-hmm. $100,000 makes it pretty easy to be like, well, I'm having a bad year. I guess I'll just sit on the bench and collect my check. Like, I don't feel like, I think there's a lot of people on our forum, at least on the Slack channel, say like they don't feel bad for Brendan because he got paid and they wish it worked out.
Well,
but it's kind of like, move on, right? Like, if you're getting 25 a grand and you're not playing, like, I think we should just modify the terms of our contract. It's a 1 year, $25,000 thing. And if we don't think you should be getting it next year, you don't get it. You're off the team. Like, just.
And for me, if Brendan is a tough sale, then I would go to Peyton. Like, I've seen this narrative out there of people saying, oh, I feel bad for Peyton Wilson. Well, okay. Peyton got an undrafted grade for the NFL. Yeah. He's now back in school, and in my opinion, I don't know all the terms of his deal. He's probably making six figures right now to play football. He is on the Butkus Award list as an individual. He's likely going to be ACC Defensive Player of the Year. He's probably going to get his jersey honored at NC State. Damn it, I don't feel bad for him that State's 4-3. I mean, Peyton's doing pretty good right now.
No, he'll probably.
And I mean, I'm sure Peyton will tell you. You know, Peyton will say all the things about, hey man, you know, the team I want to win, and he does want to win. Because he's a damn competitor. But I'm not feeling bad for Peyton. He's doing pretty good. He's doing pretty well right now. You know, yeah. Go look at some of the guys who didn't go back to school and aren't playing for anybody.
Or just look at the guys that have gone to Kentucky, for example, from our – right? Like, we had several guys leave, right, for greener pastures and aren't having any success from what I can tell. You know, so like I bet in a few years everyone's going to look back on this and be like, damn, a lot of these transfers don't work out because, like, for the most part, they weren't good there. They're probably not going to be good here. It's going to be rare to have, like, the guy that steps up. It's usually probably going to be the guy that was just having a breakout year at a lower level that probably has a likelihood of success.
Right. And that's fine because that's why I want to throw more darts at the portal because they're all not going to work out. Like, that's the issue I have with only taking Jaramillo. Is think of it puts you in a spot where it has to work out, right? Like, the example I don't know if we talked about it on here, was Louisville last year brought in six offensive linemen out of the transfer portal.
Yeah.
Well, guys, I'm not smart, but I think you can only start five, right? You know, so not only of whatever the hell they got returning, not only what they had starting or returning or in the high school. They also brought in another offensive line. So they brought in six. That's how you attack it. And so when I went and looked at their depth chart, I think they have three of them starting and two of them are backups. So five of their 10 offensive linemen, they got out of the transfer portal.
Right.
And they're better offensively now. They've had one of the most explosive offenses in the country. And I don't know how much of it is directly tied to their offensive line, but I'm just saying they didn't go out and say, oh, we just, you know, Derek Eason's been here 3 years, guys. It might hurt his feelings if we bring in a transfer guard. And again, I'm not saying State's saying that. I'm just like, I don't know what the discussions are. You know, we're bringing back Derek Eason, Dylan McMahon, Tim McKay, Anthony Belton, who have all four played a lot for you. Okay, fine. You can bring in competition. Like, it's not going to hurt anybody's feelings. You don't have to gift stuff to guys. And that's my issue on the offensive side. Like, the complete opposite is look what State did on defense. They still have Savion Jackson, Davin Van, Trevali Price. That didn't stop them from getting Noah Potter. That didn't stop them from getting Red Hibbler.
Yeah. And those guys seem happy to be playing their role.
Yeah. They still went out and got help and added depth. Offensively, it's almost like, well, you know, Jordan Houston's been here since 2019, and it's his time now. Okay. The next time I hear someone tell me it's somebody's time, I'm going to remind them of how Jordan Houston used his time. You know, it was 3 weeks before he realized it wasn't his time. I mean, it's just ridiculous. I don't get it. And if you guys give me a better explanation, that's fine. But,
nope.
You know, we're just happy with that. Like, you couldn't go out and get a transfer running back. No, yeah, man, we may upset Jordan Houston and Michael Allen. They may get their feelings hurt.
If we had a little bit more NIL, is Trevion Cooley here? Or is that just – that was just a freak occurrence?
No, I think State chose to pass on Trevion personally.
Yeah.
And I don't know why. I mean, I think there's some stuff going on. Anybody, yeah. I don't want to be in game six where I'm starting DeMarcus Jones.
I don't
care. And again, no offense to DeMarcus Jones. I mean, as a walk-on, he's put himself in a position to receive some snaps. Congratulations. But you're on the road at Duke, and that's who you're starting at running back. That's a problem.
The only excuse for that is if Robert and I goes, I'm going to break all my tendencies on these first three plays, and I'm going to give it to the running back who should never get it to run.
Right.
I'm going to give it to the wide receiver who we never give the ball to. Right? If they came out and said, well, we tried to get a little cute and break some tendencies, and that's why we did that, I'd be like, cool, I get it.
But let me ask you this.
Doesn't make sense.
But even if that was what your thought process is, what are you gaining from it?
Do you think you're gonna
hand it to DeMarcus Jones on inside zone and he's running 90 yards for a touchdown?
I mean, he
got 7 yards. Shit, it worked. It worked. They weren't expecting us to hand it off to him. He got 7 yards on it. Okay. How about just give the ball to KC? I don't know. Maybe. Or, you know, play Michael Allen and give it to him.
I just want to say, James, I believe KC was the leading rusher running back yards per carry, I think. Yeah. Again.
He's the best running back and the best wide receiver.
Yeah. So he's probably the best quarterback. He might be your best punter. Kicker, I don't know. He's
Are you
a good
saying
football he's
the next
player.
Thayer? Is he the next Thayer where he's like, you know, 150 QBR?
Right. He could be. I mean, he's 0 for 1 this year because they did have him throw a pass against Notre Dame, I believe.
Yeah, that was a bad pass, too.
Yeah. I mean, but you know, he let it go. I'm with Evan on it. I don't trust some of the stuff there.